Well, hello and welcome to the Living Scent Podcast. My name is Justin Wester, and this podcast really exists to help you live like an everyday missionary in your household, your workplace, your neighborhood, your city, wherever it is that you call home. I release a new episode of this podcast on the first Wednesday of each month with that goal in mind. And as we step into a brand new year, I wanted to do something a little bit different. You know, over the past couple months, really the past year, I've had the privilege of sitting down with pastors and leaders and everyday followers of Jesus who are quietly living out the gospel in very powerful ways. And as I was praying about how to begin, I kept coming back to four specific conversations, really four moments, where I remember literally stopping mid-interview and just thinking, man, that changes things. That changes how I see things, how I apply things, how I think about things. They weren't necessarily flashy moments or viral moments, but they were deep, paradigm-shifting ones, and I want to share those with you. But before we jump into that, I want to just say thank you right up front for those that have been sharing and reviewing and liking the content on the various platforms where this podcast is consumed. Every time you do that, I see that, and I wanted to say thank you. That's a big gift to me. And when you review this podcast, it really helps to expand the reach of it to potential listeners out there as well. So continue doing that, and a big thank you in advance. Also, a quick reminder, this episode and previous episodes' show notes are available to you to download completely free. Just go to my website at justinwester.com, navigate to the podcast tab, and you can download them there for free. You can use them for self-study if you want to go deeper, or you can lead a small group if you're a member of a small group at a local church, or maybe you lead a team in the marketplace, a group of employees, and you just want to dive deeper into a content that you have listened to on this podcast. Make use of them however you see fit. They're really designed with you in mind. But again, they're free to you. Take advantage of those this month as well. So today, I want to revisit moments from four different conversations, each from a different context, but they all point to the same truth. And it's this: we may be overcomplicating the mission of Jesus. And here's what I'm going to do. After each clip, I'm going to share why that moment mattered to me, what it's still doing in my own heart, and I'm going to present some suggestions for you moving forward if you want to go deeper into that content. So, to begin, let's start with a question that completely reframed how I think about discipleship and church planning. This first clip comes from my interview with Robin Waller, and it's on episode 34. In this clip, Robin asks a question that totally changed the way their church made disciples, and I think it will do the same for you. Check it out.
So we started to go back and say, well, okay, what's actually the bare essentials here? And what's the New Testament paradigm? Like, how did the New Testament churches plant churches? And there's this great little verse in Acts 8 where it says, a persecution came upon the believers, and they were scattered. And then it says they went on their way preaching the word. And then if you fast forward, these like random unnamed disciples end up in Antioch and plant the first church that reached the Gentiles. Mm-hmm. And then later on, the apostles in Jerusalem are like, hold up, what's happening? And it leads to this like really exciting thing. But it kind of blew our minds that, well, it's like, wait a second. The first church planters were basically these random, unnamed, untrained followers of Jesus, basically running for their lives. And while they were running, they were like, hey, can I tell you about Jesus? And so we asked a really simple question, which changed everything for us, which was, what if we set out to disciple people in such a way that if anyone in our church community was dropped into any city in the world and left alone for 10 years, and we came back, there would be a vibrant church there. Mm. And that became kind of like a question that I would use to test everything we did. Is it helping us raise disciples who can make disciples? And if we can raise disciples who can make disciples, we'll inevitably end up with lots of church plants.
Well, when Robin said that, I remember feeling like the floor kind of shifted underneath me. Because that question exposes something uncomfortable. You know, maybe the reason why we don't see multiplication isn't because we lack strategy, but because we've aimed discipleship too low. You know, we've often described success as attendance within the church world instead of reproducibility. And Robin's question forces us to ask, are we forming people who know how to follow Jesus, or people who know how to attend church. Because remember, in the New Testament, churches didn't start because someone had funding, a launch team, and a sound system. Churches started because ordinary believers carried the gospel wherever they went. And when Robin talked about forming disciples who could be dropped into any city and see a church emerge, it took me all the way back to episode 2 of this podcast. You know, early on, we talked about the idea that most believers already have what it takes to live on mission. It's through their personality, their placement, and even their pain. We weren't talking about programs or platforms. We were talking about ordinary people already sent by God right where they are. And in a lot of ways, Robin just gives a long-term vision of that same truth. When disciples live sent where they are, multiplication isn't forced. It is actually inevitable. If this moment stirred something in you, episode 2 would be a good place to go back and sit with that idea. Robin's moment, in a nutshell, reminded me that church planting isn't a professional skill. It's actually a discipleship outcome. And if that's true, then the mission is far closer to all of us than we actually think. Okay, so this second moment comes from my friend Neil Powell. He is a church planter in England, and he, in this clip, describes what he calls the Dunkirk spirit and the call for every boat that floats to be on mission. Check it out.
Thank you. Well, the Dunkirk spirit, if you've not seen the film Finest Hour, that biopic of Churchill or the film Dunkirk, then I encourage you to do that. That'll give you a sense of what happened in May 1940 when literally hundreds of thousands, over 300,000 British and Allied troops were stranded on the beaches of Dunkirk, having been pushed back by the advance of the German army. They were almost to a man, I think, in fear of losing their lives, that eventually the German Air Force and then the military would arrive and there would essentially be the loss of many, many lives, unless the British people could send, and other Allied forces could send, boats to rescue these people who otherwise would perish. And Churchill himself estimated that if they could save 1 in 10 of those 330,000 British and Allied troops on the beaches, that that would be some degree of success. He was hoping maybe 1 in 10 could be rescued. But there was a matter of urgency because the German military was advancing. The call went out not just to those naval vessels, therefore, to come and go to the beaches of Dunkirk to rescue these soldiers, but really to anyone who had a seaworthy boat who could get to Dunkirk to go in their boat, whatever size it was, whatever condition it was in, as long as it was seaworthy, whatever its previous principal use had been, go. We need every boat that floats to go, whether you can take 5 or 20 or 80 or 400. And many of those boats, of course, not only took that hazardous journey to Dunkirk once to collect passengers, but went across the English Open 2 or 3 times in order to go again and again to rescue souls who would perish. So every boat that floats is what I began to sort of recognize. And in the same sense, if we, to use that metaphor, recognize that people are facing an eternity without Jesus Christ, they are without hope and without Christ in this world, they are the equivalent, the spiritual equivalents of those Allied troops on the beaches of Dunkirk. It's just a question of time before their lives come to an end and they face that lost eternity. So we need to get any boat, every boat that can float, every kind of church that is faithful to the gospel, to go to people. And that, what it gave me was that sense of when I have eternity in my heart and mind, I worry a little bit less about whether they're Anglican or Presbyterian, or which hymn book they use, or their style of music, because every boat that floats, everyone who is capable of proclaiming Christ to a lost generation, we need them to go.
That phrase, every boat that floats, has stayed with me for a long time, because it really challenges something so very subtle within the church, which is our instinct to protect our tribe instead of prioritizing the rescue. You know, when eternity is at stake, preferences lose their power. Neil wasn't calling for theological compromise. He was calling for gospel urgency. And that forced me to ask this question. Have I been guarding my boat when Jesus is actually asking me to row my boat? You know, as Neil was talking about collaboration and the urgency of the mission, it reminded me again of a previous conversation that I had with someone named Lance Ford, which is in episode 23 of this podcast. Lance talked a lot about leadership, not as control, but as carrying the weight with others. And in a lot of ways, he's getting at the same thing Neil is saying here. Movements don't happen when churches compete. They happen when leaders choose humility over platform. And if this idea of collaboration, shared mission, and of servant posture is stirring something up in you, I'd really encourage you to go back and listen to that conversation as well. You know, what if unity wasn't about agreement on everything, but alignment around the mission that matters most, the primary issues? That moment reminded me the gospel advances faster when we stop competing and we start collaborating. The next clip comes from my interview with Tommy Hendricks. It's episode 44. Tommy is a children's pastor here locally in Tallahassee, Florida. And in this interview, Tommy really zeroed in on the primary mission field of our homes, our household, and specifically the role, the critical role that fathers play in the spiritual development of their homes. Check it out.
Yeah, I think one quick story, the biggest one for me was meeting my dad. And because, you know, I went 18 years, 19 years, whatever, with not a picture, not a visual, anything, no memory. And he was traveling through Oklahoma one time and called us out of the blue, said, hey, if you guys want to meet, I'd love to meet. And I said yes. And the four of us weren't going to go, and us all four said yes. And my little sister, well, little, she's 18 at the time, was home from college. She didn't want to go. But we went and picked her up, and we went anyway. So we drove, and we met him. And that 3 or 4 hours was pretty life-changing for me, because it really hammered home for me, hey, some dads end up in this spot and they don't know how they got there. And so, you know what? I'm going to be the best dad I can be, whether I annoy my kids to death or what, but I'm going to be active in their life. I'm going to be present and realize, you got one shot at this. You know, this is it. And to me, so goes the dad, so goes the family, you know, so goes the family, so go our churches. So go to the churches, so go our communities, and communities lead to what our nation looks like. So if we're in a bad situation, you know, where you live or even think nationally, it's because of men. It's because men have not done what they're supposed to do in the house first. So if you do it in your home, you're more likely to do it out in public. So that's my encouragement, is just, you know, be the dad, step up to the plate. You don't have to be perfect. You know, just be there. Just spend time with your kids and live Christ in front of them. And pray to God that they do the same. And then we're dead and gone one day, our kids and grandkids will still be doing things they're supposed to be doing to honor the Lord.
This one hit close to home, literally, because so many of us think of mission as something that is out there. But Tommy reframed it for us. The most strategic mission field many of us will ever have is our own home. That doesn't diminish the city. It actually shapes it. You know, faithfulness at the breakfast table spills into the neighborhoods, it spills into the schools and our communities. So when Tommy talks about the home as the place where mission really begins, it echoes something that we've talked about way back in episode 21. In that episode, we reframed mission by saying your first mission field isn't overseas, it's actually your household. And Tommy just puts flesh on that idea. He reminds us that faithfulness at home doesn't compete with the mission. It actually fuels it. If this moment is pressing on you, episode 21 is a good place to go back and revisit that perspective. So, going full circle, here's the grace-filled part about what Tommy had to say. Tommy wasn't calling for perfection. He was calling for presence. Did you catch that? That moment reminded me that living sent, again, doesn't start with a passport, doesn't start with a platform. It starts with showing up again and again and again where God has already placed us. Okay, the final moment that we're going to touch on comes from my interview with James Hobson, my good friend. He's a pastor over in Lynchburg, Virginia. And in this clip, he's really describing being crushed by some naive evangelism expectations and how that prepared him to plant and pastor well. Check it out.
And yeah, so I mean, we talked about Dr. David Wheeler. Here's something that helped me as a church planner. Going on those ministry exposure trips, Dr. Wheeler, shout out to Dr. Wheeler, as he's watching this, wherever he is, right?
That's right.
This is going viral, right? He made evangelism seem so simple. Like he'll be like, I sneezed, 10 people came to know Jesus. It's like, I was in a bathroom stall in a Winn-Dixie in 1978. And that brother came next to me. I saw his shoes. His shoes said, I need Jesus. I said, hey, brother, on the other side of that wall. If you die to-. He just was up. So I would take all that zeal, Justin. I would take all that ambition. And I'm like, on this ministry exposure trip, we're doing New Testament numbers. 5,000 are getting saved. And I get to, I remember being in Philly. And I'm like, hey, I want to tell you about Jesus. And it's like, F you. Oh, yeah. I'm like, what a rude awakening. It's like, no, I can't be bothered. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful that I came in bright-eyed, bushy-tailed to a desire to share Christ. But realistically speaking, it's actually he who wins souls is wise. People are behind layers and layers and layers of demonic activity for generations. And I'm praying that the light of Christ would be revealed in people, but I'm not sneezing and people are coming to know Jesus. And it caused me to come back home and just scratch my chin and say, man, and so I get to do it again and I get to do it again and I get to do it again. So when we launched, I wasn't disillusioned.
So I'm really grateful that James said that out loud, because I think a lot of believers carry some unnecessary guilt. You know, we think we're failing because we're not seeing instant results, when in reality, we've been invited into long obedience. He helped me see, again, that evangelism is both about proclamation and proximity. Not pointing people to Jesus from a distance, but walking with them long enough for trust to form. So what James is describing here, the patience, the presence, the willingness to walk with people through layers of pain, really connects closely with something we've talked about in episode 37. If you'll remember, in that episode, we explored the idea of imperfect hospitality, opening up your life and your space without waiting until everything is cleaned up or figured out. And that's really what James is pointing to. The gospel often moves at the speed of relationships. And if this moment resonated with you, episode 37, again, is a helpful place to go back and sit with this idea, much slower, more faithful version of evangelism. And really, in a nutshell, this moment reminds me, faithfulness isn't flashy, but it is formative. And hospitality, patience, and presence, they're not distractions from the gospel. They're often the delivery system. So there you have it. Four conversations, four very different contexts, but the same thread running through all of them. God is doing his work through ordinary faithfulness, through homes, through relationships, through everyday believers who stay and who live sent. And so as we begin 2026, my prayer isn't that we would do more and add more to our already busy schedules. It's that we would go deeper, deeper in discipleship, deeper in unity, deeper with Jesus, deeper in presence. Because when we do, the mission of Jesus doesn't shrink. It actually multiplies. So remember, as you go out, you don't have to live sent this year. You get to. We'll see you next time.